to The Backlog, a podcast hosted by Adaptivate. I'm Katie Cords, Head of Branded Content. In today's episode, we feature a recording of our recent live webinar hosted by our Adaptivate Singapore team. Featuring four guest panelists from different industries, they discuss leadership in times of change and uncertainty. Enjoy the episode and please subscribe to the podcast. It helps us and allows us to keep bringing you new content around agile and business. On with the episode.
Good morning. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. Welcome to our webinar on leadership in times of change and uncertainty. My name is Cindy Gan from Adaptivate. We're so excited to have you able to join us today. Now, let me do a quick introduction about Adaptivate. We are a global consulting firm, and we have over 10 offices globally and 150 consultants and agile coaches globally. We specialize in scaling agile ways of working and embedding sustainable change. Today, we're hosting this webinar with our panel members across different industries, countries, culture, and background on building resilience in team and grooming next generation leadership. To moderate this panel, I'd like to hand over to my colleague, Brigitta is her full name. She's a partner at Adaptivate. Over to you, Bea.
Thank you so much, Cindy. Yes, I'm lovingly known as Bea, but my name is Brigitta. Yes, and I'm the partner and global practice lead for business design and innovation at Adaptivate. I've been in the Sydney office for just over 4 years, and I'm really excited to be moderating the session with our fabulous panelists today. So I'm going to hand over to each of you to give a quick introduction about yourselves and let us know, where you're from, which country you're in. Let's go. I'm going to hand over to Brittany first. Please, can you open up for us?
Thank you, Bea. It's a pleasure to be here today with all of you. I'm Brittany. I'm from here from Standard Chartered today. I'm based in Singapore and from Australia.
Michael. Yeah, hi, Bea. Thanks for having me. I am Mike Castro from EDC, based in the Philippines, and I am helping them in their agile journey.
Thank you, Michael. Stephen?
Hi, morning, everybody. My name is Stephen. Now I'm heading the Human Capital Strategy and Talent Management in PT Bank Mandiri. I'm based in Indonesia. Happy to be participate in this. I for sure is really inspiring and productive discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. Veena, over to you.
Good morning, everyone. So my name is Veena Kalia. I'm a project manager at Haleon, which is a healthcare company, and I'm excited to be here. I'm based in Singapore, originally from the UK.
Thank you, Veena. So. A little bit about the topic that we are going to be speaking about today. So it's really front of mind for us. So during times of change and uncertainty, we find that those leaders and organizations that succeed are the ones that embrace the change as opportunities and create a new vision and strategy. So they improve process, they seek out new markets, and they really invest in their people. Many of our clients are embracing the change, but a lot of them are now facing issues with the toll that it's taking on their staff. Now, at Adaptivate, people are really front and center. Adaptivate was really created for people. And the topic is really important to us because it also affects our business. So we created this forum today to bring a little more light to the topic. And to hear from these fabulous panelists and get a little bit more understanding about what's worked for them and maybe potentially what hasn't worked for them so that we can share some of these learnings with our community. So we also want to make sure that we involve our audience as much as we can. So to start off the discussion, we'd like to ask the audience a question. So there's five answers to the particular question. There are the answers. So the question is, the most important leadership skill to create resilience and engagement in teams is. So I'll just give you 30 seconds to have a look at those questions and answer the one that resonates with you the most. Okay, so we have an answer to the question. So the most important leadership skill to create resilience and engagement in teams is great trust within the team and the leader. So 82% believe that trust within teams and leadership is the most important thing. I tend to agree with that. There's a second is foster growth mindsets, and then another one, clear communication. So I'd like to quickly hand over to Veena. Veena, what do you think about the answer to that poll question? Do you agree or disagree? What are your thoughts?
So I agree actually with the answer. So I'm glad that the audience are kind of the same mind. I think without trust within your organization, within your teams, it's really difficult to really take people along on the transformation journey. And so, yeah, I think trust is one of the key things. Interesting that, like, you know, the growth mindset came second and then communication came third. So I'm sure we'll have more discussion around that. But, you know, definitely, I think all of the answers have their place. But I am definitely in agreement with the first one.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that, Veena. Agree as well. Thanks for your insights there. So without further ado, let us open up to our panel discussion. We have a couple of questions ready for our panelists, and this is a discussion, so please feel free to hop in and, you know, if somebody's providing an answer and if you have an opinion to it or you have an experience, please feel free to hop in and answer as well. But my first question is going to go to our lovely Brittany. So Brittany, I know that you have worked in multiple transformations in different companies. And you've worked globally. So you've worked in Australia, you've worked in India, you've worked in Singapore, you've worked in China, and you've had a reasonable amount of success with most of your transformations. So what I want to know from you is, what is your secret sauce to leading your organization through changing times?
Thank you, Bea. What a great question. I'm grateful for all of the different experiences actually across the various countries as well. And I think, but I think the ingredients by and large remain the same. Besides having an amazing team to work with on those various transformations and fantastic leadership as well, the key ingredients that drove us and really helped us go forward was, firstly, keep people informed. People want to know what's happening and why. What's the mission that we're all gathering around? And don't do that once. That has to be visible to them day in, day out. In one of our transformations, that was as we walked through the door and out the door every single day. What were we there to do? What were the things that we were rallying around, and why were we doing it? In a more virtual environment, that's sitting on your background of your desktop. So keep people informed, make the mission visible, make room for dissent. So people are not going to be happy about every change, and it's uncomfortable. And acknowledging the discomfort, making room for Q&A clinics, airing out what's confusing, understanding that, and making time to reflect, inspect, and adapt on how we're traveling is really critical. But it also only works if it's data driven. So in the theme of keeping the mission in mind, what problem we're trying to solve, we also need to be data driven about it. So what are the kind of indicators that are telling us that we're on track, rather than keeping it based in feeling? And finally, celebrate success as you go. The small wins, the big wins, and the lessons learned are really critical. There are lots of learnings throughout the transformation. If something hasn't gone not quite to plan, it's not working. So these are the key ingredients, regardless of context and country. And finally, connection as well. It's about people. People are at the heart of any transformation, any change. You have to drive it together and collectively. No one individual can do it. And so making them connected, understanding their different personality types, the different talents and skills that they can bring, and also making that visible to others, helps them connect and interact in a much more meaningful, efficient, and effective way.
Mm. Thanks, Brittany. Thanks for those insights. I'm hearing like leaders need to embrace the empathy as well. They really, you know, empathy is something that's really, really important here, and you know, fostering a sense of purpose within your people. So, awesome answer. Thanks for that, Brittany. Great. Michael, I'm going to hand over to you now. You have a really important role as an Agile coach in EDC. Having been an Agile coach before, I know that it's quite a privileged position. You have the trust of the teams that you're working with. They tell you everything. You know, you're the person that is, you know, you have the ear to them. But not only do they trust you, your leadership trusts you as well. Your leaders trust you to be passing on that information and passing on how they can support you. So my question to you is, what can leaders do to help teams build resilience in times of change?
Okay, thanks for the question, Dee. So there are three things to that, right? First is leaders should foster the agile mindset. So meaning, they need to encourage experimentation, continuous learning, and adaptation. So one example would be in the face of failure, what I frequently hear from the leaders and the teams would be, moving forward, what can we do better? So emphasis on the we. So that's the leaders also try to, try to make the environment kind of safe and not more a blaming culture. Okay, mm-hmm. So that's one. Another thing would be same as with Brittany, be transparent. So here at EDC, we have a quarterly town hall where we inform the teams about the organization priorities, how are we currently performing, and what can we continue to do to make the next quarter better. Okay. And thirdly would be open communication. So for managers, we have a regular check-ins with the teams. Also, one-on-ones are done at least once a month with individuals. Even the leaders, they do this kamustahan session. Kamusta means how are you in English. Okay, so they take out the team for a coffee and then just try to find how they're doing. In special occasions, we have impact centers, especially when the change is big. There are impact centers where teams can share their concerns or help needed. And on a regular basis, we do have huddles, wherein the usual huddles like what they're doing, what are especially the help needed, because by the end of the day, the delays are coming from the help needed that are not voiced out.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm hearing that whole, the empathy again, the communication, all about connecting with your people, making sure that you are really listening to them. Yeah, and that's actually a wonderful segue to the question that I want to ask Stephen. So Stephen, people is your, that's your business. You are in the business of people. So you've been a senior manager in the people space for a long time in multiple organizations. So my question to you is, how do you effectively change, how do you effectively communicate change to your teams and manage their concerns during these times of uncertainties?
Okay, so thank you, Dee. This is remind me in one sessions in the past before when we really want to shut down one department. Yeah. And then we conduct what we call a sunset meeting.
Yeah.
So it will be interesting because at that meeting, we only hear all the grievance, concerns, and maybe someone will be angry at that moment because we will shut down all the department, right? So one thing that I learned is being candor is one of the key. So you need to be transparent and open. Why you do that? Why you do such change like that? The second one is, I think it's already, we show it, we see it at the pool that trust is the key. So be open and honest. And in additions, you use empathic listening to listen really the concern of others. And last but not least is providing support. Yeah. I saw one interest, advertisement in LinkedIn that tell everybody that their company is now shrinking down. So these are the list of the people that they can hijack from their company. So it will be interesting and unique approach, but that is part of the support that being given to the employee during this time of change. So three things: be candor, empathic listening, and provide support. That is the three critical skills that leaders needed in the times of change.
Yeah, that's great. I totally agree, Stephen. But I heard you say the why, and the why is so important. It's important in everything we do. So, you know, all about communication, even when we spend time with our clients, sometimes they don't actually know what they need. So we really need to, you know, understand what the why is. Why are they wanting to go on a transformation? Why are they wanting to do something? So not just, you know, everybody else is doing it, let's do it. We really want to understand why so that we can provide them with the best solution possible. Because oftentimes people are confused and, you know, they don't really know which direction to head in. Yep. And we want to be able to give them the best advice possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Vina, it's actually probably a good segue into the question that I have for you. Your company has been through a lot of change. I mean, you've worked in multiple places as well, and you've had a major acquisition. So how do you foster a culture of resilience within your team and encourage them to bounce back from setbacks?
A great question, and I think I'm probably going to hit on some of the same points that the rest of the panelists have made, because I think there's common themes really in all of the answers. But, you know, coming back to, you know, one of the points that Brittany made was around, you know, kind of making sure people understand the, you know, the mission, the vision. You know, it's like, you know, sometimes it's rolled out very high level, and it's kind of making time for kind of people want to understand what is the bottom line, what does it mean for me? How does this relate to my job? How does this relate to what I'm doing? Does this impact my family situation? You know, it's like people have a lot of questions. And so you need to really hold space for people to be able to air those questions in a safe space where they can really feel comfortable, you know. And but also as leaders, we also need to share our feelings. We need to be vulnerable too and say, yeah, this is how it's impacting me, but this is what I'm doing about it. You know, and get encouraging people to really, you know, speak up, act, you know, provide support, you know, but really keep that conversation going, because as things move on, you know, it's like people will have the same questions. They may have slightly different questions. They may have like, you know, but a lot of it relates to personal, you know, like, what does this do for me? You know, how can I improve? How can I support? I don't understand this, you know, and sometimes you may not have the answer. You know, but you have to be able to kind of like, you know, okay, let me see what I can do. What can I find out? And make sure you always come back to people with the answer, you know, because if people are giving you feedback, you have to act on it. You know, you can't just kind of listen and then go, yeah, great, I listened, you know, and that's it. You know, it's like it's a two-way, you know, two-way communication. You know, it's like if they're sharing, you need to share, but you also need to try and resolve and provide support. You can't always answer everything, but you have to make a good effort. And it comes back to the empathy as well. And also picking up on within teams, you know, picking up on maybe some of the behavioral cues. You know, like sometimes people, they, you know, their behavior changes. And it's like, that's not normal for that person. Mm. Or, you know, whether it's a, you know, a positive thing or a negative thing, you want to kind of understand what exactly is going on here. And also, you know, we also as leaders need to role model the behaviors that we want to see, you know, because, you know, because if people you know, if we're just talking the talk but not walking the talk, people see that, you know, and, you know, you have to lead from the front, but sometimes you have to push other people forward also.
Yeah, it goes right back to that question that we just answered, right? It's the trust. Mm-hmm. So if you're not walking the walk, people are not going to trust you. You're just providing lip service.
Exactly.
And if,
exactly.
You know, we continue to give our people surveys and all sorts of things to fill out about, you know, engagement and happiness. And if we don't do something about those things, then they will not, you know, we'll have a low engagement score. People won't want to fill out forms, and then we don't get any feedback. So, and the worst feedback is no feedback.
Yeah, so, and yeah. That in itself, yeah, tells you something. You know, it's kind of like if people are not even willing to give feedback, you know, something is wrong, you know, because they don't feel comfortable sharing, so that level of trust is not there, which is why they're not engaged. So, you know, it's like a negative response, you know, or no response is really something that we need to act on. So I think it is really important. And then coming on to the kind of second part of your question, I guess the, you know, kind of bouncing back from setbacks, you know, I guess a lot of people perceive setbacks as failure. So one of the things that we encourage is really to celebrate the failures, you know, and like, you know, not just the wins, you know, it's kind of like what happened, you know, and it's actually, you know, making it people feel comfortable talking about failure, but also, you know, what did we learn from that? What would we do differently? And I know individuals tend to be quite hard on themselves. They don't remember the stuff that went well. They only focus on the one thing that didn't go well. And so, you know, sometimes it's, you know, to help those people is like, if somebody came to you with the exact same problem, what would you tell them? You know, and often they're much better giving advice to others than they are taking advice for themselves. You know, sometimes just by turning it around and saying, okay, if you were talking to somebody else in the team who'd done the same thing as you, you know, what would you tell them? And they often, their approach is much softer, you know, and also just kind of not holding any kind of failure against people. I think people beat themselves up enough. We don't need to do that too. So I think it's just being, you know, comfortable that people can talk about failures, but also sharing, you know, what went well, what didn't go well. And, you know, I heard a story recently just from a colleague who had said that, you know, one of her first jobs, she was in charge of inventory ordering. And, you know, in the first month, she made like a major error. And, you know, she was like, I never want to do this job again. I don't want to be responsible because if I do this, and, you know, and the manager basically said to her, like, actually, you're the best person to do this job because you are never going to make that mistake again.
And so
I think it's like people don't see that, you know, their kind of initial feeling is always to, oh my God, I never want to be in that situation again. But you learn more from failure than you do from success, you know, because I think, you know, and I think that's important for us to reinforce and to you know, really listen to what people's concerns are, because sometimes it's like not everybody thinks like me.
It's absolutely, you learn by your mistakes. So that's why we are told about all of these fairy tales where if you go into the woods, you're going to be eaten by the wolf, and if you speak to strangers, somebody's going to eat you. So we learn by others' mistakes. We don't necessarily get told the rosy story, because that's the lesson.
So yeah, and I think, you know, look for opportunities within the opportunity, you know, within the transformation, you know, let people see the positive things that can come out of things. And, you know, maybe people actually want to get involved in some of the transformation initiatives, you know, because, you know, and that's maybe a development opportunity for them. It's like, look for those things. You know, if people are very vocal about the changes, sometimes it's good to get them involved in something, you know, so they can actually become a supporter rather than a detractor, you know, and often it's because they're not getting the information that they need that they are more uncomfortable. So help them.
It's something that we see quite often in organizations, and it's usually the people that are, they're worried, they're scared. It's not that they don't want to do it. It's just that they haven't got enough information and we aren't communicating with them enough, and they don't feel involved. So they will be detractors. So it is those people that we need to get on board until we find that maybe they don't want to come on board at all. And then there's other things that we need
and
to do.
And that's a different conversation. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But I think, you know, we have to take them along on the journey with us. Everybody.
And I saw Michael nodding quite a bit during that, especially about how hard we are on ourselves with what we've done wrong. When we do retrospectives, we kind of glance over what went well and we focus so much on what didn't go well. And yes, we do need to learn from those, but absolutely, we need to celebrate the successes. Definitely, we need to do that. So we spoke about, you know, during times of turmoil and change, you know, you might, your personality may change. There's something that might affect you. Empathetic leaders need to take note of that. So Brittany, question for you. You would have seen this quite a lot, and I'm interested to understand how you've managed this. So how do you manage conflict in your teams during periods of change? And how do you ensure that everybody is sort of aligned on the goals?
It's a great question. And yes, you're right. There is the conflict is part and parcel of any kind of transformation. I think first and foremost, you need to plan for it and recognize that conflict is not a negative thing. Conflict can be very positive and, in fact, is an essential ingredient to high-performing teams. But in order to take it from a negative to a positive, you have to start out with understanding people, how they operate, and ensuring that they, in fact, understand one another and what pressure looks like for each of them. What are those behavior styles? How do they think they react? And making sure that they can work through that. So we want collaboration, not just cooperation. Mm-hmm. And in order to have that, we can't just have diplomatic sessions, agreeing and walking away and doing something else. So one of the things that I found very useful at the outset is exactly that, set the scene, make sure people are aware that we want a little bit of we want their varying views. We want to understand that we are not expecting everyone to be in alignment from day dot, and creating ability to communicate spaces to have those robust discussions, but also then guiding them to close it and converge. That conversation without some form of convergence and agreement to work towards the mission collectively as a team or leave as a team on what's been decided is not fruitful, and we'll leave it open and nothing getting done. So action-oriented positive conflict is where you want to get to, and it takes time across different cultures, across different personalities, and it takes executive sponsorship too. So another important point, and we're very lucky to have such an incredible coaching cohort as well throughout these different transformations that I've been part of, we work with the executive leadership team to inform them that this is the way that people are going to start to engage. And it's very different. It's different to coming to a meeting and lots of nods and one person stating how it's going to be and everybody getting it done. It's going to be collaborative, action-oriented, varying views, and setting that scene so that they can, in fact, foster an environment and ask for more from people in those conversations, and also allow for people and encourage a variance in views. And so that's my take on conflict. On the flip side, when it is negative, spotting it, speaking to it, having those one-on-ones, spotting it early as a leader in your one-on-ones and those behavior change, I think, Veena, it's spot on. You need to be able to spot for it and have an open conversation and see what kind of support is needed for that individual. But then also as a team, if the dynamic's really shifting, what's causing that? How can you first observe and listen and then understand what might be needed? In a lot of the transformations too, particularly under pressure, I've found conflict will arise out of, look, the deadline's been set for them on something they don't have the tools to do it. And Michael, I can see you're nodding there. You know, they might not have the data, the information, the people, the contacts to get it done. Naturally, that's going to cause different behaviours, conflicts, no, I can't get it done, all sorts of things. So it's not about avoidance of conflict, but it's about the right tools, the leader's awareness of what it is and how the team can actually come together, understand the pattern of engagement and their own personality types and work through those inevitable scenarios that are going to happen.
Yeah, we find through transformation, while you're talking, Brittany, I'm thinking about all the stories when we've started our first transformations and we've got a team down in the trenches and we don't have the tools and we've half of our team has been moved somewhere else, and we're really stressed, and we're uncomfortable, and we're complaining to each other. But generally, those people are the people, you know, if we stick together and we build resilience within the team, those are the people that succeed the most. Those are the people that, you know, then become the leaders of the transformation so that everybody else can follow. It's it's a really interesting, really interesting topic. Anybody have anything else on conflict that you'd like to add before we move to our last panel question? Okay, so it's kind of a segue into that. It's more about measuring and tracking. So we talk about, you know, wanting to understand our people, wanting to get the feedback, wanting to understand where they're headed and how they feel. So how do you measure and track team resilience and engagement? And what metrics should leaders pay attention to? So maybe I can start with Michael.
Sorry, is it me? Okay, so can you hear me?
Yes, can.
Okay, okay. So usually for EDC, we have an external provider. So we have an employee engagement survey every 2 years and have a pulse survey in between. So focus mainly on a lot of categories, actually. But to note, there are, like, for example, are the priorities clear? Is the support there? Is there trust? Is there collaboration? Something like that. So that's how we measure here in EDC.
Okay, great. Is there anybody that has any other forms of measurement, or if you even agree with, you know, do we need to measure? Do we need metrics?
So definitely,
we need to measure.
I was just saying, we do definitely need to measure. And I think, you know, I think a lot of companies do the kind of global surveys for everybody. And the frequency, I think, tends to differ. But, you know, the results are always meaningful. But I think sometimes when there's quite a lot of turbulent change, potentially, you know, it's like you need to measure maybe a little bit more frequently so that you can adapt as you go along, you know, because maybe the message is not landing. You know, the sooner we correct that, or, you know, the sooner we can bring people along. Whereas if we don't even know if the messages are landing, it might be too far down the road before we can actually course correct. So I think it's, you know, and we can do that on many different levels. I mean, with some of my teams, you know, we just take time at some of the end of the meetings, just like, how are you feeling? What's going on? What have you heard today that, or this week in some of the announcements that is bothering you? You know, and just kind of getting a feel for kind of what's going on. Sometimes, you know, you don't really have time in a lot of team meetings. So sometimes we just do one word answers, like, you know, in a word cloud, you know, and see what comes out as like the most popular, because that in itself then is like, okay, we need another conversation, you know, and that sometimes, you know, you can do weekly, you know, just to track with different teams. It doesn't always have to be with the same team, but when you do notice that there's something maybe going on underlying and you want to get to the heart of it, you kind of have to, you know, probe a little bit deeper and get people to open up. And those are not necessarily formal metrics, but they are things that give you, you know, basically finger on the pulse as to what's really happening on the ground.
They don't have to be difficult and formal. It's just, you know, letting people know that you're listening. Stephen, you had your hand up. Do you have?
Yeah, thank you. So based on my observations, Peter, many survey is good, yeah, but sometimes organizations will treat this survey or this metric is their goal or their objectives. So I think we need to learn more, especially on the verbatim side rather than on the score. So because from my observations, the verbatim, the concerns that employees say sometimes disconnect with the rating or the quantitative score that they provide in the survey.
Yeah.
So that is one. The second one, do not lose your employee sensing through the, you know, communications, one-on-one dialogue, and so on and so forth, because that is really most important, rather than you are only focused on metering, because we just do not want to simplify to measure the engagement through this metrics.
Yeah, agree. Totally agree. It needs to be a lot more personal.
I agree with Stephen. The problem is sometimes the focus on the ratings. What we're excited about is when these the results come out, we usually focus on what are the things that we need to improve on. So that's kind of a baseline of what we plan to do in the next year. So yeah, I agree with that, Stephen.
Yeah.
I would add one last point too, is in any transformation or in building resilience for the team, it's about taking action. So it's one thing to collect the results or do the pulse checks or use any kind of metric, but if at the back of that you're waiting 6 months for anything to come back or to be done or to know what happened when you gave that feedback, it's really a pointless exercise and people will stop providing the information or telling you the information. So action for leaders is key and timely.
Agree. Can't agree more. Thanks for your insights. All right. So thank you. Those were the questions that I had. And I know that we've got a lot of questions that have come in from our audience, which is great. But we're going to do a little bit of a test and learn at the moment. Haven't tried this before. So a little bit new for us. We're going to give you a couple of questions. We're going to just fly them out at you. And I would like you to provide sort of one-word answers or just a short sentence. If it needs a little discussion, that's also fine. But I'm going to fire some questions out at you, and let's see how quickly you can answer them. So it's a test and learn, so let's go. My first question is for Michael. Michael, fill in the blank. Leading through change is?
Challenging but rewarding.
Sorry, say it again.
Challenging but rewarding.
Challenging but rewarding. Couldn't agree more. Okay, for Veena, two essential things a leader needs to be doing every day during periods of change.
Listening, I think, is one thing, and also communicating and connecting.
Listening, communicating, and connecting. Awesome. Stephen, one for you. Which is more challenging in times of uncertainty, people or process?
People.
Easy one. And for Brittany, if you could put a quote on a billboard for everyone to read during a transformation, what would it say?
Tricky one. It sounds very stereotypical. Keep calm and carry forward. But no, I'd say.
Love it. All right, for Michael, which is the greater cause of fatigue and burnout? Poor management or poor time management?
Poor time management.
Poor time management. Okay. And for Veena, who is easier to lead through transformation, managers or employees?
Employees.
Employees, provocative, but yes, agree. For Stephen, did leading people through change and uncertainty prove to be easier during the pandemic or after the pandemic?
After.
After the pandemic, you found it easier. Okay, interesting. And then Brittany, lucky last, name one book or podcast that you would recommend leaders to read or listen to prior to a transformation.
Oh my goodness, there's so many. In fact, I'm going to rebut this and say don't read one. Yes. Get on the podcast, download Blinkist, and start somewhere, wherever fits them, because to be honest, in my experience, one book or podcast won't fit them all. And what I encourage instead is start your learning journey if their style is audio books, then Blinkist, take that on your walks, and go from there. There's many different options for them to listen to and read, but they need to connect with the content first. So I actually assign them that first and work backwards from there as to understand their personalities better. Because there are a plethora of things. And also, if you do it in that way, you're not throwing the textbook at them. They're self-discovering. Mm. But it might be based on topics too. So depending on the transformation as well, if it's technology focused, then there's a starting point there versus more human-centered transformations and things. So I start with them first and understanding what it is that we're trying to do, and then pull out my list.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Does anybody have any comments on any of the questions that came up? All good.
To not leave the audience hanging, the one book that is really good, The Obstacle is the Way.
The Obstacle is the Way.
Yeah, specific to mindset, but The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Halliday.
Thanks, Brittany, and Vina is nodding in agreement.
Maybe I would like to add one. For me, it's a John Fisher book. Is talking about the process of personal transitions, because basically sometimes we only focus for the organizational transformations, but we forget actually people need transitions to do this.
Yeah, sometimes we need to look inward before we can help others.
Yeah. And I think probably another recommendation is maybe Anything by John Maxwell. You know, he has podcasts as well as books. And if people are looking for a starting place, he's generally fairly well-rounded and definitely thought-provoking.
Great. Thanks for your insights. All right. So I'm getting the prompt to move on. And the next session is our Q&A. So we've asked our audience to ask, to type in some questions. And there is a little button that I can see to see who has the most votes. All right. So I'm going to ask this question to our panelists in general. Whichever panelist it resonates with the most, please, can you answer? I'm not sure if we'll be able to get through all of these questions. Let's see. So the first question is, what's the difference between someone who is good at leading people through change versus someone who's outstanding? So I think we've seen, you know, people that are good, but then those people, they take it to another level. What's Brittany, what's their secret sauce maybe?
From what I've seen, I think there's the doing, the above the iceberg, but I think the leaders that are outstanding are the ones that make the team shine, where you can see around them the change has spread, where you can see that people are starting to evangelize themselves, but that leader has basically set the direction and got out of the way and let people get on with it, but maintained that connect with them still. And that's a really hard thing to do. They haven't treated it like a tick the box exercise and then just walked away from it when it's kind of good enough. They're still there in the trenches with the team, guiding, listening, connected, but the teams around them, the enterprise around them has caught the bug and they're excited about it and they know what's going on and they're now making the change. That to me has been what's been the difference between someone that's really good at leading change more as a tick box exercise versus someone that's made an outstanding impact on people in their day-to-day.
Yeah, you just kind of gave me goosebumps. You know, we all know that leader. You know, those of us that have gone through transformations, we know who those leaders are. Anybody have anything else to add?
For me, I think that's connect to what we call the ambidextrous leaders, because I think the role of leaders now is divided into two. One, like the one that the question is, leaders need to optimizing what is we have now. We need leaders that can really exploit what the core competence now. And this leader is really having a good execution skills. They can really, manage performance very well. But on the other side, leaders need to explore the future at the same time. And this relates to connect to the visionary, connect mm-hmm. to purpose, and so on and so forth. So that leads to the transformation part. But in reality, I think leaders need both. You cannot really, bias into only one. If you really want to be really a sustainable leaders in the organization. So that is my take from the question.
Probably a good segue into the next question that we've got in. A few people have mentioned empathy. Do you have any practical suggestions on how to develop empathy in ourselves if it's maybe not a strong point? Veena, this is probably something for you, given your deep people experience.
I mean, it's a good question because, it's like I feel like some people, everybody can develop empathy. I think it's a, it's an underused muscle for some people, but, it is something that you can definitely develop. So, I mean, I think that's the first point is if you think that you don't have it, it is something that you can improve. And so, how would you do that? I think a lot of it comes down to self-awareness, understanding yourself will help you understand others, but also truly listening. Listen to people. And if you don't understand their perspective or their point of view, question, but seek to understand, not criticize or create conflict. So I think, be open to what people say, even if it doesn't really, you may not understand, maybe it doesn't resonate with you, but really hear what they're saying. And I think try to really understand where they're coming from, because their circumstance could be very different to yours, which is why you don't understand it. And so I think it's important to really have that awareness, not just of yourself, but be open to hearing other people's point of view, other people's perspective. And just, I think keep doing that. Yeah, I think mm-hmm. the more you do it, the more you will, be more empathetic. And, I think it is, really important skill for people to develop. And definitely, I think there's more people who are working on this skill during transformation because they really want to help their peers, their teams. They really want to support them. And, empathy, I think, is something that comes from that. So I hope I've answered the question. But if anyone from the panel has anything to add.
I was going to just build on that, Veena. I think absolutely spot on. Everyone can develop a sense of empathy. And one of the practical examples that I've experienced is bring the people to where the action's happening, because particularly for leaders, you can get ivory tower syndrome mm-hmm. and not know what's going on in the ground. So walk the walk, come to the team, see where it's happening, feel the pain. And we even extended that to, teams that we've had across geographies, making that regular travel on a monthly basis, rotating both teams to sit with one another. and one of the basic examples was even how teams have lunch together in one location. It just lunch was not a priority. In another, it was the essence of their day. It's what they did to connect. And understanding mm-hmm. that could only really happen if we really brought the teams together. And even switched the cameras on in each location 24/7 so we were truly connected. And that was just a good example of, look, bring the people to the scenario and they will immediately be able to understand and see and therefore have the visibility and understanding to enable that empathy.
Thanks, Brittany. Okay, well, let's move to our next question. So the next question is, in the current time of uncertainty and news of layoffs in various industries, do you have tips on how to keep your teams motivated and engaged despite the difficult environment? I mean, Stephen, this is probably one for you. You're nodding. I'm sure that this communication is something that you you know, you'll need to deal with
quite frequently. Yeah. I think one of the keys being candor. That is one thing. And the second one is clarity. What will be happen to them? So that is really the things that they were looking for. Actually, if we can really provide clarity on what's next to them, I think that also that can they can really understand the why, and they also can accept all the changes that impacted to them. The third one, I think, yeah, you need to use many. I still remember when I shut down this department. We do a lot of, you know, kind of extracurricular things, meaning that we do like, you know, during the waiting time, we do like a ballroom dancing lessons. So that is something that, you know, everybody is shifting the mind to the more, how should I call it, energetic activities. Yeah. Mm-hmm. To still boost the motivation. So that is the tips that
It's a very tricky one when you are not sure if your role is going to be there tomorrow.
Yeah.
How to keep those people engaged and motivated. It's a challenge for, I think, for all leaders and for employees. Anything to add from anyone else? Or we can move on to our next.
Just one of the other things, I think sometimes, you know, on a more personal level, I think have teams kind of focus and individuals focus on their strengths, you know, because I think, you know, when they're worried about, will I keep my job? Will I not keep my job? You know, everybody on the team is in the same position, you know, but if you focus on the things that you're good at, you know, and where you've really kind of, you know, how you've developed in your career, what are the things that you can do? What can you, you know, where do you add value? It's like when they focus on those kinds of things, it motivates them to keep going instead of being constantly worried.
Yeah, agree. Couldn't agree more. Yeah, and it gives you a sort of a sense of purpose still.
Exactly.
You know, you're still contributing. You're still, you know, important to delivering the
outcome. You're still adding value. So, and I think that's where people think that they maybe are less valuable because they're potentially going to get let go. I think it's making sure they understand that they still have value. And if it's not with this organization, maybe it's with another, but they still have value.
Maybe
okay.
If I may add, one thing that we need to factor in also is those that are left, that still have work. For mm-hmm. example, you are three in the team, and then next month there's only one of you. So we need to extend support, and especially for that person.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of that going around at the moment. You have a team of five, and the next minute you're only a team of one. So it's up to us as well, our peers, to support each other through these changes. It's not just leaders. It's also the rest of the organization. It's a whole system that needs to work together.
Yeah.
All right. So we have another question. We only have 5 minutes left, so we're probably not going to get through everything. There is a question. It's actually to Brittany and Vina. Is there a specific approach leaders should take to ensure they can satisfy all stakeholders in times of uncertainty and change in an agile environment without deviating from their goal?
I think with this one, satisfying everybody, right, is very difficult, but what you can promise them is transparency. And transparency in terms of, number one, what is happening and why are we doing it? Remind them of the problem statement and the why, in addition to what are the progress indicators and what are the feedback loops for those key stakeholders? Because a lot of the time their gripes and issues arise from, I didn't know, you didn't tell me, and I didn't get a chance to provide feedback, and now you're making this change and it makes no sense for my area. So on the basis of those pain points that we typically see from any stakeholders, it's what is happening, when is it happening, how much have we done so far, what help is needed, and where can I give my feedback and be heard, is typically the lens that I look at that through. But Vina, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I kind of agree with what you're saying, Brittany. I think it is really hard to please 100% of the people all of the time. And I think that's kind of, you know, maybe an unrealistic goal, but, you know, but the majority of people, you want them, you want to take them on the journey with you. And, you know, transparency is key, you know, and yeah, continuing that kind of dialogue. And yeah, I think when people are uncertain, there's certainly some fear behind that. And it's also trying to understand what is it that they're fearful of. And if they're not understanding the change within their team or within their function, you know, then show them the bigger picture and where they fit in, you know, and it's not just, you know, the micro level, go to the macro level so they can see why the changes that maybe don't make sense to them in the moment make sense to them as a big picture. And keep coming back to that. So one of the points you made earlier is make sure that you're continually reminding people of why we're doing this.
Yeah, so I
think it, you know, it is always a high bar to get everybody on the journey at the same time and at the same, you know, at the same pace. That's unrealistic. So I think, you know, different people will need different things for them to, you know, to get where they need to be. And so it's providing that support and as leaders recognizing that people need that a different level of support. It's not a one size fits all with transformation.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's that saying, you can't please everybody all of the time. Mm-hmm. So these are great tips and
don't try.
So I'm getting the wrap up. That was the fastest 60 minutes ever. My life just flew past me. So I'd like to personally thank the panel. I know Cindy is going to do that as well, but thank you so much for such an interactive, enjoyable chat and so many great insights. We've still got a lot of questions that we'll try and get to answer for everybody. But yeah, personally, thank you so much for the great conversation. I'm going to hand over to Cindy now for her to wrap the session up. Thank you to my panelists.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Over to Cindy.
Thank you, Bea. Thank you, all the panel members today, for your insights. And of course, thank you, all the audience, for joining us today. So what I'd like to do is maybe just a quick introduction, our closing, to say that we'd like to continue this conversation with you. You will probably know us on our LinkedIn, and we will continue to connect with you. Let's have conversation beyond this webinar session, either on LinkedIn or email to us directly. Just a quick introduction about Adaptivate again. Do visit our website. We do have articles that I've mentioned earlier on leadership, agile ways of working, and more. If you'd like to connect with us and write directly to our consultants, all our contact details are there as well. And we'd love to have a continued conversation on agile transformation or leadership as well. So with that, thank you again for your time. And for the questions that we didn't manage to answer, we will connect with you directly and all email to you. Have a great day ahead. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Enjoy Thursday.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.